Fleet Operation Standard, which has been in effect since 2006, and which really there's some increasing interest to actually create an EMS version or industry-specific versions of that standard. And the last of the fleet standards is the Road Safety Standard from ISO, and that's the 39001, which actually isn't released yet. It's still under revision and will be released in December. Once we get through that, I'm going to whiz you through some vehicle standards, where we are right now, and then touch on the developments in the international arena. So that's what we're going to do. But before I do anything else, I'm going to put up this slide, which this is actually a slide that was first brought to my attention by one of my colleagues who's in the Fire EMS Service, Michael Reed. And he said to me, you know, there are more standards in the United States for moving cattle. There are more safety standards for moving cattle than there are for moving patients. And it's a very confronting statement, but it's also very true. So, my clicker seems to have... there we go. Can we move that thing off my slide so I can see that? Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to spend a brief... Oh, okay. Do you want me to go back?
No.
Okay. Sorry. So the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is a very valuable organisation when it comes to understanding the big picture of the system of safety of transportation. And as we've mentioned before in this forum, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration has a specific exemption for emergency medical services, which I'll show you as soon as my slide goes to the next one. There we go. So the exemption for EMS from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is very specific. And, I got cartoons. It is a bit of a dry subject, I agree. I think it's good to have some cartoons. I think that's very good. So the exemption is actually very specific and also quite old and may come from a time where that sort of exemption may have been appropriate. But unfortunately, because of this exemption listed here, EMS doesn't have the benefit of the sort of safety infrastructure that other commercial carriers have. So the only time we actually have EMS vehicles captured by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is when a commercial carrier runs into an ambulance and then the ambulance is the struck vehicle. And then there will be some data. So it's not we don't appear in the data set, but the data set is not designed around us and we have a specific exemption for triggering it. And we touched on this briefly earlier, but some very important issues come to the fore. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration actually is there to give guidance on hours of service. And as we've seen in the previous summit in 2008 and 2009, and as we're acutely aware that fatigue, and I think anyone who works in emergency medicine, either in EMS or in the emergency department, knows what fatigue is like and how fatigue can be a strong risk factor for an adverse event in vehicle operations as well as clinically. So because that's a well-understood hazard and risk, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration has some pretty stringent ruling based on what's reasonable for a human being to do. And that was just updated very recently, December 22nd, 2011. Although it's not an umbrella under which we are mandated to comply, it's very valuable information. And there's much that we can learn from it. And they have structured tables of reference. And, you know, if someone was to ask me what's reasonable, I would say, I think what's reasonable is what the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration tell us is reasonable. And I think there's some real merit in having a look at that those documents. They're available freely online. And I think there's much to learn from them. Would I be able to have the next slide, please? Thank you. Okay, we've got the next slide. We'll get to that other one in just a moment. So the other issue that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is very mindful of, and it's something the DOT generally is very mindful of, and we talked before about smartphones being of huge value as a communication tool and as a data management tool, but we're very aware that the use of handheld and even ordinary non-handheld phones are a serious distraction issue. And driver distraction is a topic we're going to be covering very shortly this afternoon. And we need to have a pretty robust understanding that when we start to make requirements on people who are operating a vehicle, that may create distractions for them. And we've seen enough examples, either interacting with a GPS while you're driving, and we've seen some dreadful outcomes in the state where I come from, in New York, where a young woman lost her arm because the person driving the emergency vehicle, and it was not an emergency, they were returning to the station, got distracted dealing with the GPS, and their vehicle ran off the road and she lost her right arm, which clearly should have been the arm that was dealing with the GPS. Next slide, please. One of the problems that we run into is that fleet management is a transportation science, really. And most of my medical colleagues, when I talk to them about a fleet, they think it's nothing to do with transportation at all. So there's some new standards out there. Fleet standards, there's some discussion of industry-specific version of the ANSI standard, Z15. The ISO standard, which is an international road safety standard, is going to be available end of 2012. The NFPA is an ambulance vehicle specific standard, and that's currently undergoing some final revisions and is due to be implemented in June 2013, and we'll talk in a little more detail about that. And these are just standards that have attracted quite some attention since 2009, when we had our last meeting. And the ambulance equipment mounting standard from the Society of Automotive Engineers, that's standard 2917 and 2956. And I'm going to talk in a little more detail about those. And I'm also, for the non-engineers of us here, I'm also going to talk a little bit about what an ambulance equipment mounting standard is and what a vehicle safety standard. Very different things. Did I miss a slide? No, we're good there. Okay, so for those of you who haven't seen it, this is the Safe Practices for Fleet Motor Vehicle Operations. It's put together by a standardising body, the American National Standards Institute, and it's a standard, and it's written by experts in the field of managing fleets, and not the type I had the picture of. And EMS do not have an exemption from this, although I am aware that they did try to seek one at one point. So this is a great document, and it would be great to have an industry-specific version of that document, and there's definitely some interest to doing that. It encompasses all the things that are very important in a fleet management standard, and it's written by experts. You could probably spend a number of weekends trying to write one, or you could probably just use one that's there, and it's available from the American Society of Safety Engineers or the National Standards Institute for less than $60, I think, which is a great investment in a safe system. This is the other standard I mentioned, the ISO 39001. It's a road safety management system standard. It's designed to sort of work with your own organisation's management system, no matter where in the world you are. So it's fairly unique content. It's being used as a requirement standard for certification. That's one of the plans. It comes from ISO, which is a very reputable global standardising body, and it's designed for all organisations, public and private sector. So watch this space, because we'll be hearing more about that this year. And it focuses on road traffic safety management systems, and it's very much a systems approach, and I think will offer us some very valuable tools in addition to the Z15. Okay, so vehicle standards. Well, the NTSB has identified that clearly our actual ambulance vehicle standards are not the most robust documents out there when it comes to protecting the occupants in the way that the vehicle original OEM manufacturer may have wished it to. And this is the document from 1979, and the NTSB still stand by this document, and understandably so. The other problem we have is when we go and have a look at the DOT documentation, is that the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, FMVSS, has specific exemptions that identify part of the ambulance, the rear compartment, once you're more than 600 millimetres behind the seating reference point of the driver. So there's a grey area there where we don't have the guidance that we're used to having in passenger vehicles governing what's going on in the back of ambulances. ASTM have a standard, this was updated, I think, just after our summit. And this relates to standard practice for design, construction, and procurement of emergency medical services system ambulances. And a fairly comprehensive document and interrelated to some degree with the others. So we used to have, oops, sorry, we used to have an AMD, and well, we still do have an AMD and a triple K. AMD standard and a triple K specification. Let me just clarify what those were or are. The AMD is the Ambulance Manufacturing Division of the National Truck Equipment Association. It's not a standardising body, it's an organisational body, professional body, and they have, and to this day still do, write their own standard for the design of their vehicles. It's not written by an automotive safety body, it's written by the manufacturers. And it's a very different document from an automotive safety document. The other document that's out there that people call a standard, but it's a specification, is the Triple K. The Triple K comes from GSA, the General Services Administration, and it has an interesting history where General Services Administration routinely does not write design standards for vehicles. When you take a step back and you start to look at where is the science driving either of those standards as it pertains to emergency vehicle operations, and that's you run into a situation where it's very different from what we see in the automotive industry. In the automotive industry, standards are based on injury criterion, are based on injury data, population-based injury data, and impact biomechanics, and we don't have a lot of that level of detailed data in emergency vehicles. So it would be really valuable, and as we've seen, we're starting to get better detailed data so that we can actually drive a standardising process based on the sort of data that automotive standards are usually based on. But until we do that, NFPA is working very hard to try and bring the best out of the Triple K and the AMD and create something that at least is a step in the right direction. As it says there, the document that's currently under revision is to be, I think, implemented in June 2013. And the NFPA process is a very different process than the crashworthiness standard process that usually takes place under the umbrella of the automotive industry. That standard, those automotive standards are usually driven by automotive crashworthiness engineers, and this is a very different, this is a consensus process, and it's a very different process. So there's, next slide, please. So the goal of the 1917 is to try and integrate the best elements from Triple K and AMD. And we're going to talk a little later about the international standards because they have a very different approach. The international ambulance standards are driven more by the automotive industry and automotive engineers rather than this type of consensus approach. It brings an increased focus on operational safety and includes items such as seatbelt and speed monitoring. So these are very valuable steps forward. There's an increase in the use of safety warning devices. There is a lot of discussion about this standard, given that it's a process that's a little different from what EMS is accustomed to in the design of their vehicle. And I know that there is a call to have more input from technical automotive safety and crashworthiness folks. And there are some folks that are just a little concerned about how to deal with the spectrum of vehicles that we have in EMS, you know, smaller ambulances, how are they going to fit in with the standard? So there's a lot of good discussion and a lot of good questions being raised. And I think that the more discussion, the more questions raised, the better the quality of the product. So we'll see, watch this space. I was wondering if I could have my next slide, please. Okay, and you know, folks are really wanting to know what is this going to mean to the EMS industry? Do I have to spend more money and buy a bigger vehicle so that it meets this sort of standard? Or am I going to operate in a different way than I'm used to operating because there's a new standard and it may drive a different practice? So those questions, I'm sure, will all be very well fleshed out over the next period of time. The next document I wanted to touch on are these two documents, the Frontal Impact Society for Automotive Engineers 2917 and the Side Impact Society for Automotive Engineers 2956. Now, to your average healthcare provider, that sounds like a crash test standard. Sounds like there's a vehicle that's having a frontal impact and there's a vehicle that's having a side impact. But these are equipment mounting testing standards. These aren't standards that are designed to demonstrate what's called intrusion, and that's when the actual structure of the vehicle comes inside the vehicle where there might be occupants. Now, I'm sure it's patently obvious to automotive engineers that they don't need to differentiate those differences, but to us healthcare providers, it is important to understand the different types of standards, and the engineer is going to, Jean Lacano is going to speak in a little more detail about the different types of standards in just a moment. But it is important to realise these are not vehicle crashworthiness standards. These are wonderful standards written by the automotive industry with some input from EMS, but they're designed for testing equipment brackets, which is wonderful to have, but it does not in any way address the crashworthiness of the vehicles themselves. Could I have my next slide, please? So just before you hear the engineering version of different types of testing, I thought I'd do the Reader's Digest version of testing for dummies, no pun intended. I had to learn this language when I got involved in this field, so I'm going to share what I learnt so it's clear to you, at least to get this sorted. There's things called deceleration sled tests. They don't usually put a whole vehicle on them. Usually it's like a sliding thing and... not very technical, but it's a sliding thing that comes to a sudden stop. Or sometimes it's a sliding thing that starts up in a hurry, and the engineers tell me that's just the same, it's just the reverse. But usually with a deceleration sled, there's not intrusion of a vehicle, and often they only have parts of the vehicle on there. So it's not designed for anything to actually hit the vehicle, it's just to make it stop very, very, very quickly, or start very, very quickly. I'm sure Jean will deal with my explanations in just a moment, but to a non-engineering mind, this is helpful for me to understand what goes on there. Then there's another type of testing. It's called a barrier impact test. It means you run something into a barrier, usually a vehicle. Usually it's a vehicle, and the vehicle gets squashed, it gets intrusion. That's different from a deceleration test. Thank God I didn't make the engineer do this part of the presentation. Then there's another type of testing I'd like to describe, and that's full vehicle-to-vehicle test. That's when you get one vehicle and another vehicle and you crash them together. Then they're both going to get some intrusion that you can measure, and if you've got crash dummies in there, the crash dummies can get squashed or can have forces exerted on them you can measure. You can have crash dummies in deceleration tests, but it's sort of interesting when you put them in a vehicle that can actually get crushed because the space that the crash dummy is may go during the crash. Then there's another thing that the engineers do, and it's called computer predictive modelling. Most engineers describe it to me like this: garbage in, garbage out. But if you want to do good computer predictive modelling, you just need lots of good data of real-world injuries and real-world crashes. So that's the sort of healthcare perspective on different types of what's called dynamic testing. Dynamic means there's things moving sort of quickly. There's some acceleration and some momentum. There's static tests, and that's just push and pull tests. That doesn't involve a crash. I think I might have got it close to where it should be, but you'll be getting a more technical discussion on these topics from Jean Lekhanov after this presentation. But just before you get that, I'm going to spend a moment talking about the international standards for ambulance vehicles. Now, in contrast to the AMD and the KKK and the NFPA developing standard, or developed standard at this point, there are two international standards. One is an Australian one and one is a European one. I happen to have some personal interest and involvement and input in the Australian standard. These things take a long time to do, and I was involved in that peripherally before coming to the United States. Oh, that's all right. I'll have that slide. Before coming to the United States. And this is what it looks like, and it's actually an automotive standard, and it says for ambulance restraint systems. It's not a crashworthiness standard for the whole vehicle. It's for restraint systems, but it's an automotive standard. And it requires crash dummies to be involved. And one of the issues that I was sort of adamant about was the very thing that Chris Fitzgerald was talking about, is that people are different sizes. And they were just going to do a 50th percentile. And I said, you've never been to an EMS conference. And so they actually have two different sized crash dummies that they test. And they test them with the sort of forces that do occur in a vehicle crash of about 30 mile per hour, which is about 24G, forward and rearward and 10G traversed. The other standard that I Ronald was going to mention, because Ronald was just at their latest update, is the SEN, the Common European Community EN1789 standard. And this is a standard, again, that's written by a standardising body, the standard standardising body that does other automotive work. And it states, without exception, all persons, medical devices, equipment and objects normally carried on the road ambulance shall be maintained to prevent them from becoming a projectile when subjected to a force. And they just use the 50 percentile mannequins, but I, as I say, without the update from Ronald, I'm not too sure if there's big changes. So watch this space, because they are doing some revisions. But again, this is an equipment restraint standard. This is not a vehicle crashworthiness standard. The one big difference that is very clear when we start to look at the particularly Australian or European vehicles is ambulance vehicles is that they frequently are built into the types of vehicles that have inherent safety in their structure and that are tested for that safety by the automotive industry that builds them. And it's no surprise that when we start to look at what the innovators in EMS in North America are doing is they are also using vehicles that have a lot of safety features built into their design by the OEM, rather than trying to make a safe vehicle by building it as an aftermarket structure in total. So I think at that point I'm going to hand over to the engineer to give you the real perspective on what automotive testing is all about. So,
hey, Gene is a good moderator. I'm supposed to keep you on time. You got 10 minutes. First 50.
All right. Nadine, you would have made one hell of an engineer. I am being very serious about it. You're a great doctor, but you've got an engineering mind. Maybe you should go back to school and you should teach some of the engineers some of the things that you've learned. I think you'd be a wonderful teacher. At any rate, I'm going to talk about types of testing. I'm going to cover a little bit of automotive stuff, talk about medium trucks compared to smaller vehicles, and then I'll put an ambulance perspective on the situation. In the automotive side of things, we have a multitude of independent testing in standard setting organizations. And independent is a very important thing, because if it's within the industry, there's a collusion. You know, you're going to tell people what you are doing. You're going to keep your issues internal, and you're going to say everything is great. When you're independent, there's somebody checking the work that's being done by the industry. And between these independent organizations, they all work to keep each other in check and on track for safety. Within the automotive community, there's actually corporate standards, whether it's Ford, General Motors, Mercedes-Benz, Chrysler, whatever. Parallel to that, we have SAE standards, Society of Automotive Engineer standards, that Nadine has talked about. In addition to it, we have ISO and CEN standards that Nadine's been talking about. Quickly to show some of the tests that are being done, and most of this, all of this work has to be done by testing, certified by testing, not just saying, okay, we've done it, we're okay. It has to be demonstrated. This is a side impact test. Next one is a frontal offset impact test, and you can see the airbag going off in the upper left-hand side and the dummy that is instrumented. So you're watching, they're measuring the femur loads, they're measuring chest loads, they're measuring head impact loads in order to understand whether the dummies would survive this particular crash. We also have roof crush standards. One interesting thing, if you take a look at that white pickup truck, that roof is not crushed square to the car. It is crushed at an angle, because that's much more realistic than a square impact, just loading the roof as a cardboard box. On the left-hand corner, lower left, seat belt integrity, that's one of those sled tests. It's checking the belts, it's checking the attachments, it's checking the seat structure. It can be done independent of the rest of the cabin of the vehicle. And then there's coming up is dynamic rollover tests that are being done as development, because a static test doesn't take inertia into account. There's a tremendous more load if the vehicle is bouncing against the road than just being pushed, a static roof crush. In addition to the industry standards, there's independent organizations, and we've got Consumer Reports, we've got IIHS, Institute of Highway Safety, that's the Insurance Institute, and then we've got Public Citizen that are all monitoring the industry and doing various testings of their own. What's the strength of the independent advocates? Bad publicity. They write the magazines, they write the monthly letters, they report, they have the media's attention. They don't actually enforce anything. They can't say you must do it. But by getting out into the media, all of a sudden you hear about one particular vehicle failing frontal crash, or it's only getting 3 stars instead of 5 stars. And consumers hear that and say, well, I'm going to go look at the 5-star car, because I don't want to buy that three-star car. We don't see any of that in ambulance manufacturing. And then we've got the big guys, the federal government. They issue motor vehicle safety standards and regulations, and that's done by NHTSA. They're published in the Federal Registry. They're known as FMVSS standards. This is serious stuff. This is not guidelines. These are absolute laws. If you don't meet the laws, and those are laws, vehicle performance is tested. It's whether it's tested by the manufacturers and the results provided to the federal government, or the federal government takes samples of the vehicles, crashes them, rolls them over, tests the seat belts.
Your mic apparently isn't picking up. But okay. If you're talking to hear, it will pick up, but we'll probably get feedback. Just try back.
All right, so I'm going to try to use two mics.
I'm going to try to use two mics here.
Okay.
How about this? Is this
not really very
not really very good?
Sorry.
Okay, so what do the big guys have on us? Since they're laws, if the vehicle fails the test, it cannot be sold. If the vehicle, a fleet of vehicles has been sold and the government goes back and audits it and finds out the vehicle is not passing, we're talking recalls. We're talking just millions and millions of dollars of exposure to the automotive industry. That's something that, you know, the ambulance manufacturers, unfortunately, don't have that kind of, there's no leverage against the automotive, the ambulance manufacturers. The vehicle safety standards, as Nadine, the engineer, was talking about, there's a tremendous amount of safety standards for vehicles under 10,000 pounds. In other words, two rear tires in the back. There's a significantly reduced safety standard on vehicles that are above 10,000 pounds, similar to the manufactured ambulances, the boxes in the back. I'm not going to go over this, but this gives you a visual comparison. In the yellow, of the standards that don't apply to medium trucks that apply to regular passenger cars and vans. And the green stuff on the right is the stuff that applies to trucks. You can see the quantity that is excluded. And then ambulances, of course, as Nadine was talking about, are excluded over and above that. But automotive manufacturers, when they're building vehicles for ambulances, those vehicles inherently have all the automotive safety devices included in automotive safety performances. They're not making special vehicles just to reduce the standards for ambulances. Okay, as far as ambulance testing, let's take a look at this. We've got the KKK, which is going away. We've got the AMD manufacturing guideline, ASTM standard practice, and the NFPA 1917 coming up. But they're all paraphrasing each other. They're all interrelated, and they're all self-certified. And what don't they include? Dynamic crash protections are not included in the back. It's all static. It's very simple. You must have a door. You must have windows. You must have flow-through ventilation. You must have air conditioning. You must have lights. There's probably a much larger section on the kinds of lights that you put on an ambulance than on the structural integrity of the box and the cabin in the back. There's not, interestingly, as I reviewed the standards before this meeting, there's nothing for seat integrity. There's nothing for seat belt attachment integrity. There's nothing for cabinet attachment integrity. You know, so as you look at, happen to see the pictures of an ambulance crash, you literally see the walls being pulled off of an ambulance and you see the cabinets flying loose. And there's absolutely no standards on how to maintain, how to hold the things together internally. And of course, ESC is not required for types 1 and type 3. It is required for type 2 because that's the van-based, the unmodified van ambulance. So in summary, you know, the automotive industries over the years, over the, whatever, 50, 100 years, has done a tremendous amount of work to improve accident avoidance and crash safety. A lot of that information could be applied to ambulance design by the manufacturers. But, of course, because of the ergonomics, it poses a unique challenge. And the biggest opportunity is the ambulance-specific construction in the back. The boxes, the stuff inside it, you know, that's brand new. That's new opportunities that we need to be serious about. Okay. That's it. Am I on time?
Perfect.
Great. Thank you.
We're going to take a little 5-minute break because there's a little problem with the sound, apparently. So all those pearls weren't recorded. So, if you want to take a little bathroom break while we get that together, and then we'll start with the